There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 3 a week, just like this, to keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover those new ones. Of course, you can grab us at anywhere you get podcasts from. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Leave a review, give a rating while you're at it. Those always help out quite a lot. We've had some great guests on lately. The band Ride was here. Fran Healy, lead singer of Travis. We revisited a favorite interview from Chris Cornell of Soundgarden. Victoria Justice, Chloe Coleman, who stars in My Spy, The Eternal City. Ashton Irwin from 5 Seconds of Summer. Sabrina Carpenter, Common, Pete Rock, Kylie Cantrell. You can find her in Descendants, The Rise of Red on Disney. We also talk with Eels, 21 Pilots, Annabeth Gish, Anthony Michael Hall, Kurtwood Smith. Just an example of what you can get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with Tammy Stronach and Greg Steinbruner. Now, Tammy, you will remember her as the childlike empress in The Neverending Story, 1984 movie, one of the greatest fantasy films or just films of all time. Greg Steinbruner is her husband. Now, Tammy, she didn't do any more big roles after that. She kind of walked away from Hollywood. That was 40 years ago. She became a dancer. She raised a family. She does the whole thing. But no movies until now. A few years ago, her and her husband decided to do a movie together. Greg wrote it. It's called Man and Witch, The Dance of a Thousand Steps. It tells the story of a lonely goatherd who discovers that he's been cursed at birth to never take a wife before having to make a bargain with a reclusive witch to reverse the spell. It is her first role since that iconic turn in 1984. And they'll tell us how the idea of her comeback was hatched somewhat after seeing the renewed interest once Stranger Things used the movie's title track in its third season, as well as writing the script that included Easter eggs to movies like The Labyrinth and Monty Python and the incredible Chili Bowl haircut that Greg sports throughout the movie as well. Tammy also dishes on the public's fascination with seeing child stars grow up, coming up with the big dance scene at the end of the movie, and the incredible luck of all of this being released during the promotion of the 40th anniversary of The Neverending Story, as well as their plans to possibly create more within this new universe. The Neverending Story was one of the most important movies of my childhood and continues to be this day, so I'm so excited to talk with them both. Talking about Man and Witch, The Dance of a Thousand Steps, it's Kyle Meredith with Tammy Stronach and Greg Steinbruner.
Hey, hi. What's going on?
The congratulations, right? Man and Witch, it's happened. It's out in the world. It's finally here.
It's finally out there instead of just actually like right here. Yeah.
Right. Seriously, what a journey it's been actually just to watch you all, even from the, you know, from Twitter and the internet and everything, and just seeing all of this happen and knowing what's gone into it. I would love to hear, though, where did this idea actually start to hatch for you all?
So I think so. Greg and I were working together in theater, and Greg had this idea that, you know, maybe there should be a last hurrah for me where I do come back to acting on screen. And everything just sort of like weirdly converged. So the initial pitch was a 10-minute short. So who's going to say no to that? Like, sure. Yeah, let's do a 10-minute short.
Well, look. Right. So we were walking by, you know, the Spotify ad. And there's a huge Falcor painted on a full city block next to our house. And I'm looking at that. We're getting coffee. And Tammy's, you know, taking goofy shots in front of the Falcor. And I thought to myself, you know, we've been making shows in New York, you know, for family audiences and stuff. And I thought to myself, wow, if there's so much juice in that, you know, story still, that a massive company is making a huge bet on like that iconography, then I wonder if there are more people out there who are like maybe interested in what Tammy's doing now. So we kind of floated some trial balloons, and it turned out that a lot of people were interested in what she's doing now. And she started going to fan conventions and realized like there's a massive, you know, just love for the Neverending Story and interest in the possibility of her coming back to acting. So that felt validating, and you know, I didn't want to get crazy. So I was like, Tammy, why don't we start with a short film and we'll make a short like 10-minute film. You know, you'll get your chops back, and you know, we'll learn how to make a movie that we've never done before.
And the thing just snowballed. Like, it was just like, honestly, like we've just been on this ball that's been rolling so fast, so crazy, trying not to fall off of it. And it's great. Like, I feel really grateful. Like the push, like, I just feel like this wind has kind of swept up and just keeps pushing us forward. And my
and
job
then sometimes
and
it turns
job,
around and pushes us
sometimes
back.
Sometimes it pushes us back. Yeah. But once you're going, you gotta like finish. So it turned from a 10-minute into a feature. It was going to be,
well, I wrote, yeah. So I sat down to write the story, and someone said, you should make that into a feature. And I did. And that happened really fast, which is very unusual for, I think, for any writer really, but for, especially for one who hasn't written a lot of scripts. I've written some screenplays, but not like professionally. So, you know, a couple months later, I was looking at this story and it was there, and I gave it to Tammy on her birthday. I was like, I did it. I wrote the feature. She was like, this is really good.
And then I was like, oh my God, this is really good. Like, this isn't actually a script I want to do. Like, I'm not just being nice. You know, like, I was like, yeah, this is really, really good. We should make this. And then we got the funding. I mean, everything just kept happening. It was so crazy.
I do think that a lot of it has a couple of things. One is, there is a certain kind of person who really craves a certain sort of old-fashioned storytelling, which is just more about character, more about heart, more about earnestness, true emotion. Not to knock anything that the big leagues Hollywood is doing, because that's obviously an incredibly, you know, accomplished universe of things that they make. But I just wanted to get back to kind of old storytelling, that of the kinds of movies that I fell in love with going to the movies.
Yeah.
So that's what was in the script. And I think when certain people looked at that script, they were like, oh, this is that kind of story. And a lot of people just kind of got into it because of that.
Well, and then there was the pandemic, right? So that was really problematic in so many ways. But then all these really, really big actors were so bored,
yeah,
because they couldn't work and they hadn't left their house in months and months and months. And so they were
good
like,
time to be pitching
what's
projects.
This weird script? Yeah. You know, like, I haven't even looked at a script in like 6 months. Like, I guess I'll open it.
Yeah.
And so it was just so crazy. Like we've had the straight, like the best of luck, sometimes the worst of luck, but like a roller coaster of a journey. And for sure, like, need to feel enormous gratitude for like the actors that signed on. You know, Stirling Castle, we would have never shot at Stirling Castle. The pandemic killed them. They had no tourists, no visitors. Normally they would charge an exorbitant amount, but they were like, I guess we'll
take
whatever you can pay us for the week, and you get the seat of what used to be the Scottish Parliament, you know, for your film.
Yeah.
So it was all these bizarre, just like, it. I don't think this film should have been made. I don't know how this film was made. It just, we're very determined. And every time we hit a wall, we just wait for a really long time.
Sort of bang with
and just kind of tap. And then eventually we find some secret, like, under tunnel. We start digging. You know, so it's a combination of us just being so stubborn and incredible luck.
And we'll be right back right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Tammy Strunach and Greg Steinbruner.
I mean, the universe just, it really does. It sounds like it opened up for this movie, and I'm so happy it did. Watching it and seeing those, like, it feels like there are little send-up moments in there. There are little Monty Python moments, or, you know, and obviously with the ogre, you're like a little bit of Shrek in there, and you talk about, like, not having these type of movies, and you're right, these type of movies aren't there. When you're writing it, when you're putting it together, are those, I don't know, Easter eggs, tributes, are those obvious to you?
Yeah, so one of the things, I mean, obviously I was a huge Monty Python fan. It's really all my friends and I did. We just sat around and like traded Monty Python lines or Princess Bride lines or whatever. So that stuff is very conscious of sort of trying to capture those Easter eggs. And then when I watched the film that we put together, like all the way at the end of the process, and you know, the director Michael Hines is like, I don't want to necessarily just sort of try to make a film that looks like that, right? I want to make a contemporary film, which we did. But it's funny now when I watch it, there's so many more Easter eggs that I didn't know we were even doing.
Because it's like unconscious, like the dog from Labyrinth
is exactly the same kind of dog as the dog we ended up. And maybe somebody knew that. Maybe somebody in the cast. I don't know.
No, it's funny. I think you just absorb all that stuff. So it's a combo. Some things are, I mean, obviously the whole audience going, wait, what?
Yeah.
That's conscious.
Right.
But there were other things that weren't.
Yeah, no, there were some surprise Easter eggs that I didn't realize we put in there that we obviously, you know, got from some inspiration. From something.
It just makes it so much more magical. The whole thing.
I think it makes it fun.
Yeah, right, right. I will ask Greg, does he have the haircut because he's cursed, or is he cursed because he has that haircut?
I have many, many, you know, I have many beautiful things and blessings in my life. I've never been blessed with, like, you know, the best dude bro hair. Right? So in a way.
Oh my God, when they gave him that haircut.
So they send this very, very talented stylist. Like, she's hot stuff in Scotland, and they're like, we're sending you the best person, the snips in Scotland. So she comes in, you know, we're all masked up and we're in the thing. So she gives me this haircut, and she, you know, fluffs it out, blows. This is my real hair, right? And I was crushed. I was like, oh my God, I'm finally starring in a movie, and I'm gonna look like that, you know.
But
I was like, can we at least like at least can you please just make my hair not like my real hair, right? I don't want to be like
gray. So we sprayed,
you know, because I was, you know, I'm not a super vain person, but like even I was like, I can't look like that in my own movie.
The salad bowl haircut is coming back. You just put a bowl on
they're
your
convinced.
Head
they're
and
convinced.
You trim around the salad bowl.
Beth and Christine are convinced that when this movie goes out, that the goat herd is going to be like a big winner.
That's going to be it.
So,
yeah.
So here's the Easter egg that.
But thank you for that question.
So if you look at Greg's haircut when he was like 8,
yeah, it's exactly that.
It's haircut. The exact same haircut.
You know, I have a picture of myself with that haircut from like 1970.
I had that haircut when I was
had that haircut. It's all right. I had the haircut. I did. So Tammy, for you then, with the witch. I mean, the witch is her own. She's got her own issues, right? Like. She has this confidence and this great sense of self, but even like, how did you want to play her too? Because I love that, like, we have this idea of the witch in these stories and what she's capable of and what she represents. And we get so many more different layers with her this time around.
Thank you. I'm so happy you think that. She's just so bruised. You know, the world's been so mean to her. I have a whole backstory for her about just sort of the ways in which she's been bruised. And so, you know, for her, she's all bark and like, she's actually so soft underneath, like she's so kind underneath, but you know, she's a witch and people aren't nice to witches. So she's had to just like put on so many layers of protection and she's hiding. She lives in a quasi invisible house. Like you can only see part of it. Like it's all invisible, and most of the labor of her life is to invisibilize herself so that she doesn't get whacked. And then having the courage to be seen is, you know, really terrifying for her. And then when we finally see her, she's, you know, much, much softer than anyone expected. I love her. She's a good character.
It's one of the things we talked about when, you know, to your original question about like, when did we decide we were going to do this? So the main question that Tammy had when I was like, hey, do you want to be in a movie? She was like, yeah, but I want to play like a multi-layered, complicated, rich character with a real arc. You know,
yes.
if it's going to be, you know, can she still bring it? Then I want to show that I can do this at a high level and do something that is, you know, complicated and rich and difficult to pull off. And I was like, okay, well, here's the role. And she's like, that's going to be really hard.
Okay.
She's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, I think you can do it.
But also it was sort of hilarious because, you know, when you're a child actor, there's all these videos of like, well, what do they look like now? Mm-hmm. Like, that's sort of like the big curiosity. And I'm like, so the big reveal in Man and Witch, you know, I'm like shriveled and like angry and I have horrible hair. And I'm like, I'm not sure that's how people are going to really respond to me coming back, you know? But it didn't matter. It was the story. The story was what mattered, and the journey of the character. And it was so exciting to play such a rich character. So, but it was funny. I was like, oh, see how this is received.
It's also, you know, with all of the heart in it, it's also a comic character. And that's like 10 times harder than drama, right? So I also raised the bar there. I was like, Tammy, not only do you have to be dramatic, you also have to be very funny in this film, you know? And she's like, oh, great.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Tammy Strunach and Greg Steinbrunner. But you also get to incorporate your dancing. And I know that became a big part of your life.
That was such a relief.
Yeah, not just in the script, but for that to be such a big part of it. And coming up with the dance, I mean, did you all create that yourself?
Yeah, so I mean, I have to give props to Chase Brock, who is a friend choreographer of mine. The film went through sort of a two incarnations, and he choreographed the original dance for the original kind of version of it. And that was a very different dance. It was not a partner dance. It was like different sections from like all different cultures. And he did an amazing job. And then he wasn't able to come in and do the choreography for the film. And then Michael Hines wanted me to choreograph it because he thought that I could kind of capitalize on being in the room with Greg. And so it ended up being a very, very different dance, but I did use like two sections of Chase Brock's. I used the finger dance, which I loved, and this little Irish jig that was part of the old one. And then everything else I choreographed. So, and I asked Chase if he wanted choreography credit and he said no. And so I'm just saying it right here, right now, because he did a great job on those two sections, and he was so generous, and he let me incorporate them into the rest of the dance that I did choreograph.
Michael had an awesome prompt for us when we were thinking about, you know, he was like, think about this as we were sort of talking about what the dance should be. He was like, I want it to be beautiful. I don't want it to just be a joke that it's a dance of a thousand steps. Like, I want people to really feel that there's like true emotion in the dance, and it's ridiculous.
Which is kind of tonally the whole film, right, to be honest with you.
No, right.
It's a very weird, hard tone to straddle. Like, how can this be like silly and goofy
and matter
and emotionally resonant? Like, you usually have to pick one or the other, and for some reason that just felt like the right tone for this project, and so it's very delicate how to straddle that.
Well, as we talked about, and flashing back, I mean, for this Kismet style to land on the 40th anniversary of the Neverending Story, like, you talk about
that's
those
also
moments,
luck,
dumb luck.
That's also luck, because there was the,
we wanted it out much sooner.
The strike, the strike was on. We couldn't talk about it. It took such a long time to resolve. We were, you know, really like, oh my gosh, what are we gonna do now? So again, like, weird that it just landed
when that it became clear that that was, that connection was going to be a part of the release plan. It became obvious that that's what we should have been trying to do.
Yeah,
all
we
along.
It's better to be lucky
than good. That's really the message of the whole movie, right? It's better to be lucky than good. Greg Steinbrenner's story. But that part of it was when we started to get into last fall and realized, oh,
okay,
wait a minute.
We're gonna wait anyway. If we have to wait anyway, this makes sense.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, a big draw for Fathom Events was, look, we're releasing the Neverending Story as part of our classic series. Like, it would make so much sense to partner with you guys on Man and Witch and make that, you know, part of the party. But that was, you know, we thought we were going to be done with this film a lot sooner. I would love to say that that was a, you know, strategic genius on our part, but it was just luck.
And I think that, you know, a film like ours, it's very unusual for it to get a theatrical release as an independent film, independent fantasy film. Who's crazy enough to make one of those? So just the fact that we had that, the tie to the Neverending Story, and it let us come into theaters, like, again, it's just this incredible stroke of luck. And so I just really want to encourage people to see it in the theater, because it's so much better in the theater, I promise you. And it's like, and it's especially with a comedy, like, when, if just somebody laughs, then it like makes other people laugh, and it becomes this communal experience.
I don't know if we're even allowed to say this, but I'm gonna say it. So one of the things that just happened last week is we decided to do a double feature with the Neverending Story.
Oh yeah, we can
on
say that.
The anniversary of the release of the Neverending Story, and then the US premiere of Man and Witch is gonna be like right afterwards at the same theater in New York. So we're literally like opening Man and Witch in New York on the day, you know, that Neverending Story released 40 years
it's
ago.
It's crazy. You can spend the whole day with us.
Yeah.
Because we'll be doing Neverending Story in a Q&A, and then there'll be a little like lobby time, hang out, step and repeat, and then Man and Witch. We'll do a little pre-show for that. And
people are
coming in
up.
Costume.
Yeah, people are dressing up. Contented Kingdom chic.
Either Ren Fair or your favorite character for the 80s, anything fantasy, just silly, fun,
yeah,
feel good.
We did that at the premiere in London a couple weeks ago, and because it was part of a fantasy con. And so the people from the con were already like all blinged out in fantasy garb or 80s cosplay or whatever it was. And so everyone just came to the screening in their duds. We had like a medieval dinner. It was awesome. But it's so much more fun.
It's so much more fun
to sit in a movie theater full of dressed up people, like from the, like wearing like medieval garb.
And,
you know?
Or like if you're chic, which a lot of New Yorkers are, you can just do witchy chic.
Yeah, witchy chic.
Like modern, contemporary witchy chic, which is probably how I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Well, I love watching you all in this. I hope now that you've unsealed the bottle once again, that this isn't the last of acting. And what, there's, I mean, they're talking about the remake of the Neverending Story. Like, do you see yourself continuing further on now that you're back?
I would love to keep I would love to keep acting. This secret is that it's a lot harder to dance in your 50s than it was in your 20s. I don't know if people know that. I wasn't aware, but
not for me. I'm a very good dancer.
It feels very rebellious to insert myself into the acting space as a middle-aged woman, and I love that rebelliousness. So I would love to do more acting, and it feels organic with also the sort of closing the chapter on a career in dance and investigating some new ways to tell stories. So it'd be great.
And the Paper Canoe Company. I mean, that's what you guys are. That's what pushing this through, right?
Yeah. We're cautiously optimistic that if people do respond to Man and Witch the way we hope, and it's a specific kind of audience, or it's maybe a niche audience, but we think it's a big enough, you know, it's a broad niche of people who would be interested in this kind of film. We're prepared to iterate on this world.
We're walking around with our coffees brainstorming on sequels. So we have ideas.
There's definitely a roadmap for sequels. So we'll see how we do in at the end of July. Yeah. But we're happy to keep going because we think people are falling in love with the world, you know, a little bit, which is sort of what we hoped. But we're cautiously optimistic that will continue to happen. So we're ready to do it. You know, obviously it's a tough landscape, right? We're an independent company. Paper Canoe Company is Tammy and me, right?
This is our office.
we have lots of good people working on the release of the film, but at the end of the day, Paper Canoe Company is still sort of us, which is a high bar for releasing a major motion picture. So we're, you know.
And it's a very unusual thing. I mean, I feel like it's really fan driven. Like this isn't coming from the top down. It's really coming from like going to cons and people being like, come on, just make something. And I'm like, you know how hard that is, right?
No. It's amazing any movie gets made ever, ever.
It is. I mean, you know, you can hear that from Ridley Scott, you know, whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, congratulations on this. Seriously, it's so great to see you back on screen. It's so great to see what you've both done on this and to make this happen. Seriously, congratulations. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it. I'm so glad we got to do it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. Really, really appreciate you.
My thanks to Tammy and Greg. Man and Witch, The Dance of 1,000 Steps is out now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. Again, you get a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab them at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Make sure to give it the rating and leave a review as well if you feel inspired. After that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where you'll find me Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. In fact, you get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Joni Mitchell, The Velvet Underground, Ike and Tina Turner, Echo and the Bunnymen, The Clash, Ramones, Big Red Machine with Taylor Swift, Mark Ronson and Amy Winehouse, Waxahachie, Amani Coppola, Beastie Boys, Nine Inch Nails, Counting Crows, Better Than Ezra, The Beatles, Nirvana, Pixies, and my interview with Maya Hawke as we talked about her latest album, Chaos Angel. Again, just an example of what you can hear when you tune in weeknights starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.